From Illinois Public Media News, this is 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. It's Friday, May 30th. Coming up, we'll bring you a conversation with a former professor at the U of I about his experiences in North America as what he calls an accidental immigrant from China. That story in just a few minutes, but first, these headlines. Many scholars at the University of Illinois are anxious after hearing the U.S. State Department will begin revoking the visas of some Chinese students. International students who need to renew their expired F-1 or J-1 entry visa may not be able to return to the U.S. if they're unable to schedule a renewal appointment. That's according to an email sent by the International Student and Scholar Services. Tian Yang is an international graduate student studying computer science. He says a fellow student is now in limbo.
Actually, my future roommate who just signed up the lease with me and paid the deposit, like three month deposit, and he's like having his visas applying, but he's waiting for like 6 weeks. But with this policy, he might just get rejected or revoked.
The university email says that obtaining new entry visas may be significantly delayed, and International Student Services cannot speculate when scheduling appointments will resume. There are more than 6,000 Chinese scholars enrolled at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. The Champaign Unit 4 School Board has voted to remove the district superintendent. Sheila Boozer became Unit 4's first Black female superintendent in 2021. She led the district's efforts to further desegregate elementary schools and replaced a popular principal. Clarissa Nickerson Foreman started a petition last year urging Boozer to resign. But Foreman says she's since changed her mind because she thinks a previous school board president gave the out-of-town hire the wrong communication strategy.
That led her to, you know, be offensive to the community and to keep blocks there and to protect her staff. And that's how she went about being a superintendent. And I feel like they never gave her the ability to be, you know, the superintendent she could have been without that bad intel.
The board voted 5-2 yesterday to approve a separation agreement with her. The current board president, Tony Bruno, says he wants Unit 4 to have a more transparent leader. The district's facilities and services director, Dan Casillas, is being appointed acting superintendent while the board searches for a permanent replacement. A bill to let terminally ill people medically end their own lives has cleared the Illinois House. Alex Degman reports.
The measure would let patients with a prognosis of 6 months to live or less obtain a prescription for life-ending medication that they would have to administer themselves. Several lawmakers on both sides of the issue were emotional as they told stories of seeing their own loved ones die. Republican State Representative Tom Weber of Fox Lake, an opponent, says life should be celebrated.
I find it sad that Illinois wants to be the destination to end life.
But Democratic State Representative Harry Benton of Plainfield says this is about compassion and empathy.
It's not something that people should have to go through. And people should be able to make their own decisions.
The measure now moves to the Senate. I'm Alex Dagman.
Champaign County workers represented by the Association of Federal, State, County, and Municipal Employees have voted to authorize a strike. AFSCME Local 900 President Cecilia Phillips says that 96% of those casting ballots in a vote this week supported going on strike if the Union Bargaining Committee decides one is needed. Turnout among eligible employees was 90%. The union cites wages and health insurance as major issues and says the county's contract proposals are inadequate. About 150 Champaign County employees represented by the union work in every department, from the courthouse to the highway department. Their last contract expired at the end of 2024. No contract talks are scheduled at this time. The union has asked for a mediator to be brought in. County officials so far have not responded to a request for comment. Still to come, we bring you a conversation with a former professor at the U of I about his experiences in North America as what he calls an accidental immigrant from China. The story is coming up next on 217 Today, but first, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your forecast.
I'm meteorologist Andrew Pritchard with your IPM News forecast for Champaign-Urbana. Today, look for sunny skies with a high of 78 degrees and a northwest wind 5 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 57 degrees, northwest wind 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny with a high of 79 degrees, northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, clear skies with a low of 50 degrees, a northeast wind 5 miles per hour, and for Sunday, sunny with a high of 82 degrees and an east wind 5 miles per hour.
Next time on the 21st show, our Friday Week in Review. The Illinois General Assembly is closing in on a state spending plan as the spring legislative session is scheduled to end this weekend. We'll also hear about the latest news from the Quad Cities and have a summer concert preview. I'm Brian Mackey. That's next time on the 21st show. Join us.
You're listening to 217 Today. I'm Kimberly Schofield. For many immigrants living in North America, there was a feeling of guilt around leaving home and pursuing opportunity abroad. That feeling is familiar to a retired professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, who calls himself an accidental immigrant.
The first job that I got was Colgate. I still remember in December. And also, that was in 1989. I think, as you know, it was in China, there was the Tiananmen incident. So all these things come together. I think that, well, I should take this job. And then I talked to my family. They said, well, whatever you want to do with a PhD. And then I married at the same time too. So I just took the job. And then stayed there, got tenure at Colgate. And then I also get a job here, and then I come here to Illinois. So it's nothing conscious or intended. So it could maybe call an accidental immigrant. Should I call that?
Do you feel like other immigrants, even today, from Hong Kong, China, anywhere in Asia, are also accidental immigrants, and they have that desire to go back home? And do you also feel like maybe your family, do you feel you almost left them behind in some ways? Do you ever feel sad or like they didn't understand all these things you were doing and you know, you love them, but you have to kind of be far away?
I think especially immigrants in the 1970s, 1980s, especially felt this kind of pain or anxiety because we do left our family behind and always feel guilty. That on the one hand, we so appreciate their support, and especially financially, we could not do much. So it is always feel very bad. When I went to college in the 1970s in Toronto, I never returned home for 5 years. That's unlike today. I mean, as you know, I mean, today we have all these kind of internet, also convenient. So always feel guilty, but at the same time, also feel lucky to have the kind of support to do what I want to do.
It's a feeling many immigrants know all too well, the ache of distance and the guilt of opportunity. As Dr. Poshek has told us, for many who came in the 1970s and 80s, it wasn't just a physical journey across oceans, but also an emotional one, marked by long silences, rare phone calls, and handwritten letters. But history, as always, has a way of shifting under our feet. By the late 80s and into the 90s, waves of migration from Asia surged again, this time under different circumstances. Political challenges, economic ambition, and new global connections meant fewer accidental immigrants and more deliberate planners. Still, even as the reasons evolved, the journey often remained complicated. Being an activist in a country that you're not a citizen of, did you face any sort of problems or racism or anything that came out of the work that you were doing?
I would say that when I was in Canada, in Toronto, I was not have enough knowledge to judge. And all the second thing is that there were not that many Chinese people in Toronto. I remember that actually when I was in Toronto, people always say that you Chinese, you are Chinese. And then so I began to become aware of that identity. In Toronto, when I went, the first history course I took was someone probably he looked very British-like, remind me of all those colonists in Hong Kong, who just mentioned that they have to be colonists because they need to be helped by the British. So that made me very upset for the first time that I really, really felt that, because I felt really offended from Hong Kong listening to those things. And of course, I mean, in Hong Kong, I did not hear things like that, you know. So that was, but he did not say it to me in person, just to the whole class, a big class. But that is one of the reasons why I later on so want to go back to Hong Kong after finish college. But when I came to US, yes, right away. US, I think, different from Canada. When I was at Stanford, I remember that I was at a canteen or something like that. I remember that near the office. And then a esteemed faculty said something to me. We heard a lot of people, I mean, saying that China was a very poor country, you know, things like that, you know, and many things like that. So they make me feel very uncomfortable. But that was true. The 1980s was the beginning of Chinese immigrants from mainland China to US. So it was one of the transition time. You know, the 1960s began to have allowed immigration from Hong Kong and Taiwan. And 1977, just right before the normalizations of the U.S.-China relation. So I heard a lot of different kind of very biased and racist things about being Chinese, much more than in Canada, I would say.
To be identified as Chinese in North America has always carried weight. Sometimes that weight is subtle, a sense of not fully belonging. Other times it's undeniable, shaped by policies, surveillance, and suspicion. As Dr. Poshik mentioned, the 1960s and 70s saw an allowance of Chinese immigrants in the United States. But nearly a century earlier, the U.S. enacted its first major immigration restriction based explicitly on race, the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882. This act barred Chinese laborers from entering the country and laid the groundwork for decades of racialized immigration policy. It followed years and years of Chinese labor, work that helped build the transcontinental railroads and contributed to a rising American economy, but was met with fear, resentment, and exclusion. This legacy of exclusion never fully disappeared. Instead, it evolved, shaped by wars, alliances, and anxieties about who belongs and who doesn't.
Now, especially those Chinese scholars, scientists, or students who were in STEM subjects were under strong suspicions as being spies. And it started in the first term of President Trump. And also many scientists were worried about whether their research could be considered suspicious. So we also worried that too. You know, I think Chinese students and Chinese scholars, I mean, whatever, they did bring to Champaign-Urbana more diversity, more vibrant economy. Now I know that U of I has just stopped all the agreements with Chinese institutions. Yeah, students can apply to here, but there's no more cooperations, just like many other schools around the country, with Chinese institutions. So now with all this crackdown of immigration and this calling Chinese suspicions, that would be another thing to be worried about.
Dr. Poshik Fu taught Asian American Studies and History at the U of I. He grew up in Hong Kong when it was a British colony before going to college in Toronto and landing in Champaign-Urbana. Over the last 2 weeks, we've been sharing stories from What We Brought, a limited series from Illinois Public Media exploring the Asian American experience in central Illinois. We'll wrap up the series this morning as IPM's Niti Shastri speaks with Dr. Fu about his journey settling in North America. That was IPM's Niti Shastri speaking with retired U of I professor Dr. Poshik Fu. You can find the full episode and all the other stories from our series What We Brought online later today at will.illinois.edu. That's it for today. 217 Today is produced by Stephanie Oriana. Reporting today contributed by Anna Koh, Penny Bradford, Emily Hayes, Alex Degman, Jim Meadows, and Niti Shastri. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Kimberly Schofield. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, stay safe, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.